Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Perceptive Podcast. I am Josh Weiser, Game Wisdom's owner and lead writer. Joining me tonight, my co-host, Game Wisdom's site designer and artist for Smugly Games, Kenneth Ohm.
Hey there.
And my guest is fan of the podcast and site, Robert Edwards.
Well, hello.
It's good to have you back. Robert is our first returning guest to the podcast.
Yeah, good to be back.
Oh, glad to have you back. We missed you dearly.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we've had a lot of interesting news this week. For my piece, I would like to talk about the Kickstarter from Gas Powered Games. Yesterday, they put up their idea for what they're describing is like an action RPG combined with like the MOBA, which is, for those who aren't aware, I think it's called Multiplayer Battle Arena, or Multiplayer Oriented Battle Arena. It's the same type of style we see in games like League of Legends and Dota 2. So what they're trying to do is to combine the action RPG style with this type of like arena type gameplay, and then throw in real-time strategy. And what's interesting from a design perspective is that the studio has actually done these three styles before, but in separate games. Gas Power Games is helmed by Chris Taylor, who's a veteran game designer, who made games like Dungeon Siege, Supreme Commander. I think he did like the old, like, a few like the old, like, Tycoon games as well. I'm not completely sure on that. But apparently, they're basically taking their inspiration from their past games and making this brand new game. Have you guys played any games from Gas Powered in the past?
Dungeon Siege? 1 and 2?
Yeah,
I think that's about it.
I think just Dungeon Siege 1 online.
Didn't they make Age of Empires Online?
They didn't make it exactly. They basically took control from Robot Entertainment. When the project originally started, it was Microsoft and Robot who basically created the game, and then Microsoft brought Gas Powered on to basically provide post-release support and additional content. As a great lead-in for later on in the podcast, they officially announced a few days ago that there will not be any more additional content developed for Age of Empires Online.
So, this looks like they also made Demigod. I've seen that game. Have you played it, Josh?
I played just a little bit of it. This was during their time that they worked with Stardock. And there was a lot of, like, weird rumors surrounding that game. Like, some say that Stardock pushed the game out too early and suffered bugs because of that. While others say that Gas Power, like, knew about it and they, like, just, like, turned tail when the game started having problems. No one really knows outside their respective companies, you know, who's right on that. But when the game was released, it had a lot of nasty bugs with it. The network issues were really bad, and when you're playing a online game like that, any kind of lag or, you know, rubber banding around is just fatal. And I had a very nasty bug that the sound would basically distort to the point of making it unaudible. And that took about 2 months, I think, if I remember right, 2 or 3 months before I actually got that fixed. But of course, with these any type of online games, if your game isn't, you know, right out of the box, people are going, you know, run away from it and kill the community.
Well, don't forget also, I'm sure games for Windows or whatever made it even worse. Having to log in and everything.
Demigod wasn't on Games for Windows. That was Age of Empires. Demigod was on Stardock's service, which was called Impulse at the time.
Ah, interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at an image and it says Games for Windows on it, so maybe I was wrong.
Maybe they released it.
Yeah.
Probably. That was also during the time that Microsoft was doing their whole like Games for Windows branding for everything.
Ah, well, that sucks. Because that's more of a detriment against them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Someone sees that, they're like, oh, I don't want this.
Mm-hmm. And, like, Age of Empires Online, even if you get it from Steam, you still need to have Games for Windows installed on your computer to run it.
You know, I ran into that the other day when I played, which is the zombie game from Capcom?
Dead Rising.
Yeah, Dead Rising 2 is what I was playing. And it asked me for, I had to create another, like, Windows Live login. Mm-hmm. So that's double DRM, and I hate that.
Yeah. So, getting back to Wild Man, they've been talking about how Chris is, you know, putting all their chips on this game, because after Age of Empires, they're supposedly working on another game, I think it's called Kings and Castles, that has been put on the back burner because they're having trouble finding a publisher. So this is like hopefully their not last shot at making a great game, because the studio has a lot of talent.
Yes, they have a good repertoire of games, so yeah. Mm-hmm. And I really did love the Dungeon Siege series, but who made the third one? Was it Obsidian?
Yeah, from what people were, I think from like an earlier news piece, in order to sort of like raise money and help them, they sold the rights and property of Supreme Commander and Dungeon Siege to Square Enix. So they are no longer in control of those two franchises.
Ah, too bad.
Mm-hmm. And ironically, what's even funnier about all this is one of the guys they hired following Supreme Commander, a modder called Soren, who basically redefined Supreme Commander 2 with his AI improvements, he left the company a few months ago to work on Planetary Annihilation, which was a Kickstarter that I was, you know, gushing about a few months ago.
Well, I remember that, yeah.
So now and that was because he really wanted to work on that strategy game, and now Guest Power is making a new strategy game, or game hybrid.
Yeah, it's a hybrid.
Is this supposed to be a single-player game, or is this online
ARPG? That's going to be single-player, but they're going to have some kind of multiplayer aspect, but they're not 100% sure at this point. But it looks like it's going to be developed mainly as a single-player-oriented game, which in and of itself sounds pretty interesting, because we don't see like a MOBA-style game aimed for a single-player crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I wonder what type of real-time strategy elements are going to be popping in there. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of hope it's not base building. I hope that might be interesting to put in that type of a setting.
Is that one of your gripes with the genre, base building?
Yeah.
It's all right. I have a lot of gripes with those genres, though. No problems. It's more of a Josh's genre than mine.
Yeah, especially
but it gets old.
Yeah. It definitely makes it a little too rich. Like, it forces, you know, certain strategies to come to the top. We see in, like, StarCraft 2, where you have, you know, specific builds to basically run against each other, and makes the competitive game, I think it makes it just very simplistic, because you always kind of know, you know, what build counts, what build, it just becomes a matter of who can complete their plan first.
Yep. Yeah. That's how I view that whole genre from the outside. And I, you know, I don't really find enjoyment through that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at some of their awards, rewards for pledging. They have one for $10,000. Is that normal? It seems pretty high.
I think Project Gus, they had 5,000. I think that was their highest. But I have seen other video game related Kickstarters have like a 10,000 or a 15,000 reward. I think Project Eternity from Obsidian had a 10,000 reward.
Well, this one's interesting. It says 10,000, you get an invitation to the launch party, and you'll end up on their video blog, and you'll get an executive producer credit.
Nice.
And everything else. This is pretty cool. But the Project Goddess one actually sends you to E3, you get to meet everybody there, so that's cool. You also get to revive a television station to so you can get an interview from them, yeah.
I think G4 is going to need a lot more than a 10,000 donation at this point to keep going.
I think that was a 5,000 one.
Oh, yeah.
Well, don't worry, they're still alive. They're just called Esquire, and they're going to talk about ties.
Mm-hmm.
and college shirts. Okay.
All right. And the last thing to talk about with Wildman is the actual goal. They're looking to raise $1.1 million. Mm. And at this exact moment of recording, they're at $125,000. They actually made about $100,000 within the first 24 hours, which hopefully is a good sign.
That's still a pretty high price tag, though, for Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. Man, I can't remember Planetary Annihilation off the top of my head, but how much they were asking for. And I don't think they don't keep the old Kickstarters on file anymore. Now that it's 2013, because I was trying to find it, and it's not bringing that back up.
Should reference your own post, maybe you said it there.
Let's see. Oh, I have it. Because I pledge, it allows me to see all the ones I pledged to, so they were asking $900,000 for a Planetary Annihilation.
Oh, there you go. So I guess it isn't that wild of a price. A little $100,000 more.
Yeah. But we'll see. They have 30 days to go, and hopefully we'll have another interesting game to look forward to. Alright. So, what piece of news do you have for us this weekend?
Oh, putting me on the spot again. Okay. So, the news I will be talking about will be the Cyberpunk 2077 trailer by Project Red. Wait, CD Projekt Red, right? All right. I always, to me, it's always a strange name. It never flows. And I'm like, I just blame it on them being Polish. But they're the studio that developed Witcher 1, which is one of my faves, and Witcher 2. And that was another great game where it wasn't really about moral. It wasn't really about like some moral choice system. It was more of a gray choices, a lot of repercussions, like realistic repercussions instead of good and bad. And I love that.
I still need to play The Witcher 2. I put it aside when at the release. I haven't looked at it since they released like the enhanced edition and the updates to it.
Well, that's a great thing, too, because they made an enhanced edition for Witcher 1, because they recognized the problems with the first one, and a lot of it was load time, texture popping, so issues like that. You know, instead of just dropping it, they supported all the way through and pretty much gave everyone free content with the enhanced edition, and they did the same thing to Witcher 2, and that was way more optimized than Witcher 1. But you could definitely see a very high quality in both of those games, and devotion to the fans, and any sort of purchase for the product. So, I'm saying they're pretty well received developer. So, for them to release this teaser for Cyberpunk, which is its own like niche genre, people are going pretty wild over it. Even though it's simply just a teaser with no gameplay or anything else like that, just setting an atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. And I believe they're also the studio behind goodoldgames.com as well.
Yes, I believe they're affiliated with them. Yep.
Okay, so that's why The Witcher 2 is on sale like every other week.
Yep. And why we got like free good old game keys to it for anyone who bought the retail copy of it. Which was really nice, especially since the original box release had Secure ROM DRM on it.
Oh, yeah.
But you've since patched it out. So this way, if you want to, if you uninstall and you want to re-download or get back again, you can just get the free version of it from their site.
So, with this teaser, too, not only did they show like a really cool reference in terms of the art style to Cyberpunk, they also left in like a secret message within it too, talking about pretty much a message for all the fans, like a little screenshot, and that they're working on Witcher 3, pretty much. They pretty much said that it's far along in, and that they're looking for talent and base, so just send us a mail, and a bunch of other stuff like that. So it was pretty cool. So, they really know their fan base very well for people to find it right away, and then post it, and then translate it. So, I'm just saying that they're a development studio with a very solid background in a genre that isn't, explored to its fullest yet. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's only been a few games that kind of followed it. Like, what Cyberpunk games would you name off the top of your head, you guys?
guess the big one would be Shadowrun.
Yeah. I don't know. How about Cyberpunk 2077? That sounds pretty big.
Yeah.
Would you consider Syndicate Cyberpunk?
I would consider Syndicate Cyberpunk. Deus Ex, I would consider Cyberpunk too.
What about that really weird game that came out, I think, a year or so ago? EYE Cybermancy?
I don't know. Maybe. Is that a multiplayer game?
I'll take your word for it.
I assume so, because I saw people playing it, but it was like one of those games that was just such a weird title. Very difficult to get into. It was one of those games that instead of having a regular tutorial, they just made you watch tutorial videos to try to figure out.
Yeah, that never works. People just skip it every time. But, you know, I always like Trial by Fire. Just give it a shot and see what happens. But anyway, so, again, it's not, you know, that well explored of a series, and it's a complete reversal from what they've been doing, which is, you know, fantasy games. So, we'll see exactly what...
Yeah, this is their... What? Isn't this the first foray out of the Witcher franchise?
Yes. Or just out of that genre entirely, so we'll see. But that teaser looked pretty excellent. And I think I saw a video interview with one of the developers for it, and he seems to have a pretty good sense on the style of it, the dystopian nature of it. So I think it'll be really awesome when it comes out.
All right.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so Robert, what news would you like to talk to us about this week?
Well, the news I have is the NRA, the National Rifle Association, put out a new iOS game called NRA:Practice Range. And I think the big stir that is coming up about this, not only the fact that the NRA has kind of been down on video games, creating violence in the society and all that, but the fact that they made it available to kids 4 and above. So instead of marking it as a, you know, mature game or, you know, everyone 10 and up, they marked it for ages 4 and up, which caused quite a stir. And it turns out this isn't the NRA's first video game. They came out with one back in 2006, and it was rated 10 and up. But for some reason, they thought that this particular game would be educational, and wanted the little kids to get in on it.
You know, so I mean, they're a pretty good example of, like, you know, hypocrites. You know, they're talking about, they're pretty much blaming us entirely, but they don't like being blamed entirely. Also, they feel the fire, so they're shifting it to something else, and they're also shifting to something they don't understand either. So putting that together, you got a pretty, you know, dangerous enemy to games, at least. I mean, you could just tell how, you know, warped they are. Like, here's a quote, you know, from one of them saying, you know, that the game industry is a corrupt shadow industry that sells and sows violence against its own people. Wow. For you to say that about games, I think you should look at your own practices, because, you know, guns shoot, then kill real people, while, you know, in a game, they can just respawn. So.
The other bit of irony is that for most normal video games, they do not feature real guns or anything in E or T-rated titles. We only see actual, like, realistic weapons in M and up games. So to have a game for 4 and up that lets you use, like, AKs and actual real weapons sounds a little disturbing to me.
Yeah, I think they tried to get around that by not actually having you shoot at real people. You're shooting at targets and stuff popping out of the ground. But you're still shooting a gun, regardless.
And the other, I guess, sort of companion to this is that I believe Joe Biden released, like, his, like, results from his, like, little meme they had with the game industry this past week. According to a Gamasutra piece, he was basically saying that he doesn't think that the video game industry has an effect on this, but that we should do more to help our public opinion because that's where a lot of people see the video game industry as a major problem and contributor to violence.
I completely... That's a great result, what he just said, because it's true. We need to educate the populace, because we have two stigmas that are still attached to us. One, you know, all the games that we create is GTA and COD, you know, Call of Duty, and that, you know, we're all man-children in basements, you know.
And women on health, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So all those kind of stigmas that still exist to the general populace needs to be clarified, because the more that they don't understand, and, you know, the more they'll fear, you know, exactly. So that's why it's so easy to always continuously blame games for every single social ill that exists under the sun. But you can look back to U.S. history, there's always been something to blame, either it being books, movies, you know, alcohol. And look how great Prohibition did, by the way. All that did was strengthen the mafia and create moonshine and NASCAR.
And the fact that in just about any major activity, there's always going to be that minority who go crazy or use that as, you know, a launching point for their own problems.
Well, yeah, I mean, people build a whole careers off it. Like, look at like the Jack Thompson guy. He built his whole career as a lawyer trying to go after game companies. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
I think the base problem really is that we, you know, as a people, at least the American people, we want quick fixes for all our problems, right? We don't want to look like deeper into how these cascading events could all be attached to it. We just say, games. So that's it. That's the problem. Not, let's look at, you know, his profile, everything that led up to it, his social ills, how he was born, how he was nurtured.
Yeah.
But instead, we look at the nearest thing next to him. Maybe he had a copy of, you know, Charles Barkley Shut Up and Jam, and we're like, ah, oh, it's games. And basketball. Those two.
Yeah, it's definitely very quick to, like, try to go to these, you know, quick fixes. I was debating with myself I should write a piece for the site about the whole incident, about what my thoughts are on it.
I wouldn't think it would be a bad thing. I think the more journalists and people talk about it and discuss it, we can start to open up a dialogue with people that don't know anything about it, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so let's move on and let's talk about some of the games we've been playing. For myself, I've been getting into Sleeping Dogs. During the Steam sale, they had like a little bit of a pricing error the last day, and they priced the game for $4. So even though I was officially done buying games, I had to snatch that last one up at the last minute.
I foolishly bought it at $25 a long time ago. Should have waited.
I keep trying to teach Kenneth one of my little sales tricks.
I'm an impulsive buyer. I can't help it.
So Sleeping Dogs had an actual, a very interesting history. I believe the game was originally part of the True Crime series. And I think that they sold it, or there were problems with it, so they gave it to an old developer, and they basically redid it and altered it to make it into Sleeping Dogs.
Right.
And I actually found it pretty good as an open-world game. It's not as over-the-top as Saints Row was, but at the same time, it told a pretty interesting story. A little cliche, yes, but it had a good idea of, like, you play as an undercover cop in Hong Kong, and the concept is that you're trying to balance between rising up in the criminal organization and still doing the right thing and, you know, busting everyone and taking them down from the inside.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of references in the game are to the John Woo films, you know, all those Hong Kong thrillers. So it's pretty cool and pretty refreshing to see someone take that that era of film and put it into a game form. So I actually really enjoyed it. And it has the Batman Arkham Asylum, like, you know, combat. So I enjoyed that too.
That's awesome.
And yeah, you also can use environments to kill your opponents. So you could, like, put their face in an AC unit, throw them through windows, put them in trash cans. I heard that.
That reminds me of that old Punisher game that came out a while back when you could do that.
Well, that poor Punisher. That game.
That was great.
That game is never. Nothing has translated well to the Punisher. Both movies and games have not been nice to the Punisher. I mean, I think Max Payne could just be renamed Punisher, and that would be a good Punisher film.
Yeah, that'll work.
Well, not film and game, because the Max Payne movie was awful.
Yeah, that was just a weird movie. As Kevin was talking about, the combat system is really nice for Sleeping Dogs. It's one of the few open world games that actually has a pretty involving hand-to-hand system. And the only other one we can think of, I think, is the Batman Arkham series.
Yeah, and I just heard that it gets kind of bad later in the game when you start resorting to guns, because everything was built around combat, like fist-to-fist combat. So when they started doing that, it started to break a little bit. So,
yeah, it gets a little off. Like, you have this ability that every time you slide out cover, you can go into John Woo bullet time mode, which is weird because you can't activate normally. You have to basically slide out cover. So, like, even if you're, like, there's no one around, you just, like, jump out cover with a gun and you'll go slow-mo for a few seconds.
I think it'd be funny if you could activate it while you're, like, punching people. That'd be the best. Like, slow-motion kick at no one.
Yeah, the only problem I had with it was that I'm playing with a keyboard and a mouse, so I still don't have a gamepad yet for the PC. And I found that the controls were a little, I wouldn't say finicky, but they were a little bit unresponsive sometimes. So like if I would try to counter an attack, even though I would click the mouse for it, it wouldn't go off.
You know, we should get you two things. A 360 controller to plug in and a headset. So you can have better audio.
And the game also has DLC packs that came out. Did you play any of the DLC, Kenneth?
I think I have some of the packs, but I haven't played the game fully. It's kind of like what you did with The Witcher 2. They put it aside, so I still have to finish the game.
Yeah. The DLC packs... what was that, Robert?
Oh, nothing.
The DLC for the Sleeping Dogs, they have, I think, they have, like, a bunch of clothing and item ones, and then they have, I think, two, like, actual episodes. One is, like, a kung fu tournament, and the other one is basically sort of like what they did for Red Dead Redemption with the zombies.
Well, no, but they're the vampires, right? So they're jumping zombies. That's the... That's what the lore is that they hop. So that's pretty funny.
And I think that is definitely based in Chinese mythology,
That's true. It's entirely true, yes. They usually have a little piece of paper in front of their face, too, to seal them. Probably doesn't work.
Is the storyline set in stone, or is it one of those where the kind of choices you make affect what's going to happen?
I think it's pretty much set in stone. You're free to... You have somewhat of a loose order of what missions you can do. Like, a lot of the side quests are unlocked from the start, but then they'll unlock new ones as you get further in the campaign.
Okay. So kind of that same GTA open world system type of deal? Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
The one thing that I really do like is that all the side quests of the game in some way work towards progression for your character. Like, there's hidden, like, health shrines that when you go to, if you visit for them, you'll get a 10% health increase to your life bar. If you complete the missions, you have two different experience. You have police experience and triad experience, and they each work towards two different skill trees. And then each skill tree has two paths. Like, I think the police one has one for you get, like, better bonuses when you're trying to smash cars, your guns do more damage, and then there's one that makes it easier to, like, get away from cops. While the triad has two. One involves all, like, weapons. You get, like, weapon durability, more comms weapons. And then the other one just gives you, like, basically more resistance. You can take more damage. You can, I think, counter attacks easier, that kind of thing.
That's pretty neat.
All right. So what game have you been playing, Robert?
I have been playing a little tiny indie game called Starseed Pilgrim. I was looking at the Independent Game Festival website, and every year they give prizes to the best indie game and have a couple different categories. So I was looking through there and found Excellence in Design, and it was a nominee there, along with FTL as well. So I picked it up. It was $6, which I think is a little bit steep for what I've gotten out of it so far. Mm-hmm. And from what I gather, the premise, well, I guess let me read a little line about the game, the official line. Starseed Pilgrim is a game about tending a symphonic garden, exploring space, and embracing fate.
What's the last part?
Embracing fate.
Okay.
So you're this little guy, and you're sitting on a brown block of dirt, pretty much, and you're surrounded by a bunch of white space. And you have these seeds that you plant into the dirt, and each seed grows in a certain way. The yellow seeds go in a straight line, and the green ones kind of go in a snaky pattern. And as you're going, there's a star at the base of your brown dirt block that's spreading blackness throughout what you've grown so far. Mm-hmm. And as you go, you start finding other stars, and you're building up this, big plant mesh type thing. And you find other stars, and you connect to them, and you go along, and eventually you run out of seeds, and the ball of blackness will overcome you. But when it does, everything inverts. So what was white is now black, and all the seeds you planted, whatever grew out of them, becomes white space, and you're now in that white space. Okay. And there, all the stars become keys, and I have no earthly idea what they do.
Right. Well, it's like, you should give us a report back when you actually finish it up.
Was it on, by the way?
It's for Mac and PC.
Okay.
And, I mean, the art style and design is really cool. Everything's little blocks, and you're this pretty much a stick person jumping around. And I put about maybe 5 hours into it, and it's just enough to make me want to keep playing to figure out what happens, mm-hmm. but I'm worried nothing is going to happen. I'm just going to waste my time. So. Really not quite sure.
Maybe it'll surprise you.
Maybe. If anybody knows what those keys do, please let me know.
Leave in the comments.
Yeah, leave it in the comment section. But yeah, I don't know if it'll win the IGF mm-hmm. Excellence in Design. I think FTL probably has that on lock. But it was interesting.
You were saying earlier you didn't think it was worth the $6. Why is that, just for my curiosity?
Well, I guess because most of the time I've just been doing the same thing over and over again. And I don't feel like I'm making a whole lot of progress. I think if it was $2 or $3, I would feel a little bit better. I don't know. $6 isn't a heck of a
how
lot.
About,
but...
How about $5?
Ooh. Maybe. Maybe.
I like how we're debating over dollars here.
Yeah.
That sort of reminds me of how I was feeling about Little Inferno. Have either of you played the game yet?
No.
It looks like a really cool art style, though.
Is this... Yeah.
It's basically from the developers who made World of Goo. So it's sort of...
I'm sorry.
Yeah. The problem for me is that my complaints about that game are the same as yours for Star Sea Pilgrim, is that you're basically doing the same thing over and over again. But in Little Inferno, you're basically just putting things in the fireplace and then watching them burn. I mean, it's cool watching them, you know, burn. They all have, like, the physics are really nice, has a good art style, but there's no real game. Like, they try to inject some kind of puzzle to it with how if you burn certain combinations of objects, it gets, like, check mark on a list. But that has no actual bearing. What was that?
Yeah.
And the thing that really, I guess, bugged me was that the game was released for $15 when it came out. Ooh. And I just couldn't see why that game was worth $15. I mean, with World of Goo, that actually had, like, a structured campaign. It had the puzzles. It had, like, that sort of, like, a side, like, metagame where you're trying to build, like, the world's largest tower. But with this one, $15 for it just seems like they were trying to make it so, like, that, like, an artsy type game. You know, try and get, like, the higher premium for that. And I didn't think it was worth it. And I got it for sale from Steam for $7. And even that, I felt, was kind of pushing it.
Yeah.
I don't know. They probably talked up to the development costs and how much their budget was over time. And they created their price based on that, along with what the consumers could probably take. And, you know, again, I had to give it a shot myself. I've only seen screenshots, so I have no idea what you're talking about burning things. But I will give it a shot, and I'll report back myself. And we'll see if there's more... you know, style over substance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm gonna definitely put a couple more hours into this thing and see what comes out of it.
What happened? Are you finding the entire art style changed? It became like a 3D racing game suddenly.
Yeah.
Because the way you described it, the way you described the game so far, it sounds like the most indie game I've heard in a long time. So yeah, it's all, you know, block art with stick figures. Like, oh man. It's mega indie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really cool. You know, put the little seeds down, it makes a cool sound, and it has its own growth pattern, and once you figure all that stuff out, I don't know what else to do, and it's not really pushing me forward to do other things. But anyway.
Yeah. One last question. Is the game considered, like, done? Like, are they going to add any more content you know of?
It doesn't look like it. Nothing I've seen on the website or through the IGF makes it seem like there's any more to it. I think it's finished.
All right. So, Kenneth, what game have you been playing this week?
I'll talk about three, pretty briefly for each. But the first game I talked a little bit last week was Max Payne 3. So I finished the entire campaign. Again, I think it's a good game, but I think that it's not really a Max Payne game. It felt more like Die Hard than Max Payne, right? Because, you know, that noir setting, it's a different kind of noir. And, you know, even though it has the same voice actor, it has the same beats, it kind of misses soul of Max Payne, the tongue-in-cheek nature of it, you know, the self-awareness. It took itself way too seriously. Just like last week, it feels like Old Man Simulator over Max Payne. And I said, again, more of a spiritual successor to it would be probably the Alan Wake series. It was a lot closer to what Max Payne was, right?
Yeah.
So that's my consensus. Good game, but not Max Payne.
Who developed Max Payne 3, by the way? That wasn't Redmond, right?
It was Rockstar.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. And again, it's a good game, but again, I think it's a game that's, you know, just people just easily forget. Mm-hmm. Alright, so, and then the next game that I played, and it's like kind of a revive game that I've reinstalled after some people begged me to play it, Super Monday Night Combat. If anyone remembers that, that's the game everyone bought for the hats, and called it just like TF2, which it was not. It is like, it's a MOBA-style game, actually. And you have all these different character classes that you can, that randomly get cycled, that you can pick, and they have different abilities, and you have to, it's like, third person and tower defense together.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think you may be thinking of the first game, Monday Night Combat. I think that was one that had the free hats with it.
Yeah.
Super Monday Night Combat is, it was the free-to-play sort of spiritual sequel to Monday Night Combat.
Yes. That was the answer. So I'm playing the super version of it. And it's very competitive, but the community is really small. Because if there's any sort of sense of it being small, there's actually a little counter at the bottom left saying how many people are online, and it's usually around 200, which isn't a lot at all, you know. Mm-hmm. I think Smuggy Bee's Puzzle Game Skyline has more than that, and it's just a puzzle game. So there you go.
And Super Monday Night Combat and the first one, they were done by Uber Entertainment, and once again, linking back, they are now working on Planetary Annihilation.
Oh, there you go. Wow, that's a really different kind of game entirely.
Yeah.
But again, it is competitive. There is a group there, but man, when you have a community that small, and you play a bunch of matches, you start seeing people you know continuously, and you know who to avoid. And they have like set teams that will just rock your world, and it's pretty horrible.
How has the game improved? Like, I know when I first tried with a bunch of my League of Legends friends, we got turned off really quick by it because we were so used to the League of Legends style. While this is more of a first-person shooter, it's more Twitch gaming.
Actually, that's what I like about it, because it's more to my liking, because I do like Twitch gaming and deathmatch games and stuff like that. However, like, with TF2, you know, if you get hit by, like, a rocket and a half, you're dead. Mm-hmm. And if you get hit by, like, 40 rockets, then maybe you're dead in this game. I feel like the repercussions and, like, lethality of the game isn't as, you know, apparent for moderate players. Mm-hmm. Like, only people that I've seen that are able to take people out in, like, a hit or two are the super mega elite, like, play the game 24-hour people. And, again, like, I was playing a game. Everyone got, like, 2 kills. This one assassin got 32 kills.
Ugh.
And I'm like, how?
Whoa.
Because the normal assassins, you can see them just sputtering around doing nothing. And this person's just running around the spawn, just like killing us continuously. And I'm like, I hate this game. I want to install this game now. I hate this. Because in a game like TF2, like if something is happening like that, or you're being pushed in a certain way, you switch classes, and then you can, you know, there's a tactic to go against it. But here, there's no tactic. She's leveled up, and you are not. You are now owned. I'm like, this sucks.
How is the metagame? Like, is there any kind of, like, metagame for someone to get into, like, sort of like in League of Legends?
I would say, yeah, there is. And they also have a lot of microtrans that are put in there, but it's, like, you know, it's not in your face, but because of the harsh gameplay, it kind of encourages you to buy certain packs and buy certain characters, because not all of them are unlocked. So, I mean, I think they did pretty tastefully, and I think they streamlined it pretty well, and the UI is pretty cool, and it feels like a very fleshed-out game. It's just, you know, there's just a really small base, and that's very sad for a game like that. I think it deserves a couple thousand, at least. So, guys, it's free, so give it a shot, I would say. And prepare to get your bums attacked. Yes?
How long have you been playing it for? Have you noticed, like, any updates to it? Like what they do with League of Legends?
They update like every week to day. They are very dedicated dev staff. Mm-hmm. According to my friend, he's the one that tracks it more than I do, but he says it almost like every week, every day they update it. So just so you guys know, they have a very dedicated dev team to it. So, yeah.
That's good.
Right. And the last game that I'll be talking about is PlanetSide 2. I've actually gave it a shot. And it's a free-to-play MMO created by SOE, Sony Online Entertainment. And I played the original PlanetSide for like a couple seconds. And I played some of the other games. But this one's pretty cool. They bring in like advancements, experience, kind of some more of the COD kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's actually very gratifying of a game when you and a group of unknowns pick an ad hoc group and just, you know, attack and take over a base, and also defending it too. It's a great like massive combat kind of game with air, land vehicles and ground attacks and everything. Everyone has a play, so it's a really cool game. Playing it a bit, but again, you know, it's also very difficult.
Yeah.
There's no hand-holding in that game. There's no like tutorials. You jumped into a war and you get your world rocked. But yeah, so that's what I had to say about that game.
All right. Mip, so that's actually a great launch point for our topic of the week. We're going to be talking about free-to-play design. By the time this podcast is actually shown on the site, my piece has already been viewed about free-to-play design regarding Age of Empires Online and the Secret World. So, Kenneth already talked about a few free-to-play games. Robert, have you gone to any free-to-play games lately?
I think Team Fortress 2 is about the only one lately that I can think of. I really wanted to do Age of Empires Online, and for some reason I never got around to doing it.
I'm the same boat.
I definitely will not now.
Of course.
I'm not going to be doing anything more with it, which is kind of a bummer because, you know, everybody jumps off and then it dies, but I don't want to jump on the sinking ship.
Of course. And that's what I was talking about in the post, that one of the main elements that makes free-to-play games so popular are constant updates. As Ken talked about with Super Monday Night Combat, they're updating that every week. And I know Planetside gets updates as well.
And League of Legends gets updates quite a bit.
Yeah, I think they're like a champion a week now, I think last I heard.
Yeah.
And then they have...
That was another.
So, I mean, these games, all these free-to-play games, I feel like the subscription model itself is dying, and the only people, like in your post, I believe that just World of Warcraft is keeping that subscription fee thing on life support. Because eventually all these subscription-based games like Terra, Secret World, Knights of the Old Republic, they all go FTP. F2P. Because they make more money on microtrans and stuff over, you know, these subscription fees. Plus, you're creating a barrier of entry, which is a big problem, you know? You're also forcing your player to have to make a dedication.
Mm-hmm.
And with so many games out there and so much, you know, things to do with your leisure time, you don't want to feel committed to a game.
Yeah, and the $15 a month subscription basically locks you into it.
Exactly.
Because I know when I played World of Warcraft for a few months...
You poor soul.
Yeah, 6 months of my life I will never get back.
Oh, no.
I just felt that I never really got my money's worth, because, I mean, if you thought my backlog was bad then, as it is today, it's always been really bad of having so many games to play that I never felt like, unless I played the game, you know, 8-10 hours a day, that was really getting the most out of that $15 a month fee. But with the free-to-play, that's never a problem. I can play a game for as long or as short as I want, and I'm never, you know, throwing money away by doing it.
Yeah, and it's your choice to get the items. Like, in Planetside 2, it was so brutal. Again, it's brutal difficulty that I bought a sniper rifle. And it was a worthwhile buy. It's actually very effective in comparison. I didn't want to wait, I don't know, 40 years to get the experience to get it. So I just paid. So I could be an effective member instead of some guy putzing around.
And with the Secret World, when they launched, it was not only you had to spend the $50 to buy the game, you also had to get the subscription, and on top of that, the game had microtransactions. So they were basically hitting you from all sides there.
Yep.
Dang.
And I think that annoyed a lot of people too. And getting back to what Ken was saying about how free-to-play games are offering so much, it really doesn't make sense anymore to have a subscription. I mean, if you look at a game like League of Legends that gets updated weekly, or when you look at something like DC Universe Online, when they originally were announcing it, they said, oh, we're going to have packs every month without fail. So first month they got, and then the second month they were late, then the third month they were late even more, And then it was to a point that they just couldn't keep up.
Right. And I think that the FTP kind of frees the developer, too. I think what we'll see more is more the Guild Wars model, where they sell a very... If they want a game of high production, you know, they will give you, you know, $60 price tag, and it's free to play with microtrans. I think that's a lot, you know, a lot more valid, because you get your immediate payback from the cost of development, from the purchase,
yeah.
And then, you know, you treat your fans well, and they get a high-quality game, and, you know, they're more willing to spend on microtrans.
Mm-hmm. And I think that also just makes it easier on the designer, because you're not basically forced to, you know, churn out content, you know, every month, you know, to make up for that $15 subscription fee. Well, I mean, when they
you still have to put out a lot of content for the microtransactions and stuff to keep people buying into that.
Yeah, but that's random. That can be randomized. You know what I mean? You could have spurts of updates and no one would care, right? While if you have a subscription fee, you expect the highest quality treatment, including all content packs on time, on delivery. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, you're expecting sort of like expansion pack or mini episode content. I would say something like akin to like what they do with Borderlands 2 and their little DLC packs. Like each pack is about like 5 to 6 hours of more content. But of course, that content requires new art, more voice recording, more everything. And that adds up after a while.
Right. And it might be higher than the cost of your subscriptions. You know what I mean? So I think again, the Guild Wars way is the way to go. You know, a high price tag for initial cost of getting into the game, and then microtrans to help the game stay afloat. Because what you're building is faith between you and the consumer, the developer and the consumer. So, you know, that's important. That's the most important thing, is to build that level of trust and the guarantee of quality, but also not having the chains attached to the developers that they have to keep producing content on a, you know, very rigid schedule, you know? It leaves them less room to be creative and move.
I think the only developer that has really gone away with not producing so much content would be World of Warcraft, because when they released their expansions, those things are just massive.
Right, and don't forget that they have a pretty large base, even still. Even though they're dying off, they still have a huge base. When you have that many people paying subscription, you know,
I mean, I'll even want to guess how much money they've earned from World of Warcraft at this point.
Well, probably all the money got funneled into Call of Duty.
Now, one question I have for both of you. One area that some free-to-play games go, I know Lord of the Rings does this, is that they keep a subscription fee as an option. And what it does is, I think it gives you packs, you get like whatever content packs they put out, and they also give you premium currency each month. So that way, if you want to buy a hat or you want to buy some special option, you'll need to put out more money, you know, individual money for that. Do you think that's a wise strategy?
I don't like it.
I also in agreement. I don't like it.
Yeah,
I think that all can be tossed into a microtransaction bucket and let people pick and choose what they want, instead of having to have a buy-in to the special microtransaction stuff with a subscription fee.
Here's an example. Like, I believe when, EverQuest 2, right? That game eventually was all subscription. That's one of the older MMOs, right?
Yeah.
And that was a game that went free to play. But when they did it, they made a couple tiers. They made a gold, made silver, and then free to play. Free to play had like limitations on how much levels they could get and what areas they can go to, etc., etc. But if you bought, say, gold, which is the subscription fee cost, then you would be able to go anywhere, get all the end game content, get as many levels as you want. There's no caps to anything. And that's pretty much it. So they pretty much chopped the game at the knees for free-to-play.
And that free-to-play was actually confusing. If you ever saw the little chart they have for what is and what isn't available at each tier.
Because what they're trying to do is not upset the people that already pay a subscription fee. They don't want to make like they're losing out. Because they're kind of sadly in the middle between the old ways and the new ways. And their system was built around the old ways. For them to update and go to free to play entirely, it's not possible. Because they have a really hardcore base. And they want, and the thing is that, I believe that, this is what I heard, I think it was from one of the devs there, is that when they opened the store for the first time ever, like the cosmetic store, they made more money with that than, you know, all the sales combined or something. Because the people that are super hardcore dedicated EverQuest 2 fans, because listen, man, if you're playing EverQuest 2 now, at this day and age, you're super hardcore. So everything that ever comes out, they just automatically buy. So like, I'm talking about $10 for like a cape, okay? A cape that says that does nothing but shimmer, okay? So they're kind of stuck between, but they definitely see the value in microtrans and free to play. It's still there. They're just trying to saddle both, and you know, I don't know how well they're doing, but they are developing a new EverQuest, so we'll see. Called EverQuest Next. How creative. It could be good if they evolve, but they probably won't.
I think what you said about how they earned so much money when they went free to play is a good point. I remember with both Lord of the Rings Online and Dungeon of Dragons Online, they were both pretty much circling the drain before they went free to play. Right. And thanks to the free to play design, it actually brought them both back, and now they're both doing pretty well.
You know what would be, you know what would be really sucky? If you paid the $500 lifetime subscription fee, and then it went free to play the next day, you're like, ugh! How would you feel if that happened? Oh man,
I just
writing angry letters.
Hey, that
I would try to get a refund. I'm like, hey man, this sucks. This is a lifetime. Give me a lifetime amount back, please, or give me every item in the shop.
Yeah, I just could never even comprehend doing that, especially with what my schedule is and my backlog of games. I would never see myself spending $500 or some crazy amount on one game.
Yeah. I mean, the most hours I spent on any game in total was probably Team Fortress 2 overall. Looking at my Steam hours, I put them all together, I think that's probably the most I've ever played in a game. I only spent, you know, $50 for that, and three other games came with that, so.
I think my record is from Left 4 Dead.
Really?
Let's see, according to Steam, oh my god, I've spent 880 hours playing Left 4 Dead 2.
You want to play that game? I'm pretty sure I spent 1,914 hours on TF2.
What game do you have the most time in, Robert?
I think it's actually Bejeweled 3, but that's not because I was playing it.
You dirty casual.
It's mostly my fiance and there. And it's not a whole lot. Maybe 20 hours or something. I don't know. Definitely not a whole lot.
Stop making me feel terrible about my life.
I played Team Fortress 9,000 hours.
I thought I was going to be the worst one with the most hours. Thank you, Kenneth.
You're welcome. I play TF2 like a smoke break, okay? When I'm between things, I just turn it on for a match and I turn it off. But
yeah,
I see
all the time doing that.
You do that for like 7 years or whatever, and then it adds up.
Yeah. All right. Bring it back to Age of Empires and what they did with their free-to-play strategy. When it first came out, their plan was that you would basically have all the civilizations unlocked, but they were severely limited. You couldn't equip items of certain rarities. Like, they had, like, the Diablo system of, you know, rare, uncommon, elite, that kind of deal. You could only equip basic items to each one of your units. Hmm. And then to officially unlock them, you had to spend $20, I think, per civilization. Which, that was just mind-boggling bad idea.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Seems and a little steep. They lowered the price to $10, which ironically, I was saying that, I think, on a blog post or a forum, like, a few months before they did that, saying, why wasn't it $10? It would be a lot easier to rationalize that.
Yeah.
And then their strategy then shifts to now you could you would earn in-game currency by playing, like, it would be like 1 point or 2 point per campaign level, so that you could eventually, you know, buy a premium civilization that way. But still, the best way to unlock everything would be to spend real cash on that.
I see. They're trying to straddle that fence and just got skewered by it instead.
Mm-hmm. Like that, there's definitely an art to making it so that you're earning money without jipping your fan base.
Well, I said again, I think a big part of it is creating a faith and a connection between your devs and your audience, you know? So, I mean, that trust allows them to, or willing, makes them more willing to spend mm-hmm. on something that they believe in, right?
And I think having consistent updates does that in a sense.
Definitely.
When you see the developer constantly putting out more content, it just shows their faith in the product. But like when you go like 2-3 months without anything new, it's like, you know, why should I keep giving you money?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, again, because I have a viewpoint of playing that dirty game, EverQuest 2, their devs were extremely, they got a lot of rage. They got a ton of rage from these hardcore fans. But they were also very connected to these fans, too. And, you know, they made updates, made posts, they addressed issues, like, lightning quick. I mean, they even have a fanfare every year dedicated to SOE games. SOE games. You know, where they all come together and meet. And then, you know, these hardcore fans actually meet these actual developers and give them a list of questions. Like, and again, I'm giving some insight on my nerdiness here. Actually, a secret is... I used to play a class called the Troubadour, which is like the most worthless class in that game. It's a bard who sings, but it's like at the happy version of the bard, because there's two versions. There's the bard, and there is a there's a troubadour, and there's a dirge. Dirge is negative, like poison damage, whatever. And then the bard is the happy one that plays like drums and flutes. Anyways, the point is, it's a like least played class because it's pretty much the most worthless. And
I have to jump in for a second. Does the negative board do damage by playing music?
Music actually does a couple things. It buffs people and mesmerizes monsters. It's usually a big. Usually, what you are like medium damage buffers. You're scouts, pretty much, but you can buff too. The point is, because it's such a small community, we actually compiled a gigantic list on like our troubadour forums of like our 10 people or whatever. And we just get this gigantic list for this guy to go to Las Vegas and just ask the devs this giant question, every single one. Like, as soon as he got to the microphone, he's like, all right, is Troubadour questions? And he did it for us, and a lot of the problems got solved that way, because he was pretty much directly going to the dev and saying, hey, man, fix these things about Troubs, please. Troubs need some love also. What I'm saying, that's the dedication of the fan, and that's how connected... the devs are to the fans themselves. So I'm saying like, that is a very interesting and very polarizing game. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They're cool.
Man, I think, like, looking back at Age of Empires, the developers were pretty friendly on the forums. They were there every day, they were talking. But, I mean, we would go, like, months without, like, any new content. And I think they've only added, I think, 3 or 4... new civilizations. There's only been, I think, 2 or 3 content packs since the game was released. I think it was early last year. Wow. And when you have a game like that, I think another problem is the fact that it was a real-time strategy. So it wasn't just, you couldn't just add one unit or one new character. You had to add an entire side or entire civilization.
All right, we should just write a whole report about what not to do. And look at the highest one. It looks like they're like, they're purposely trying to sink themselves.
Now, I do wonder, though, how much of an effect it had when they switched developers. Because as we mentioned at the start of the podcast, it was originally created by Robot Entertainment, which they were actually created from remnants of Ensemble Studios, who created the original Age of Empires series. Mm-hmm. And then after that, they... were taken off the project where they left to do something else, and Gas Powered Games came in. So you had a case where a completely different developer came in to work on it. And to be fair, they did add a lot of new stuff to it. They were, of course, responsible for the new content that we got over the year.
Hmm.
Well, yeah, I think it was...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Oh, all right. It seems like it's almost kind of destined to be doomed from the start, just with the points you make about having an RTS of all the stuff you have to make for content. Mm-hmm. You say, like, League of Legends, they can just throw out a new character. The art for that is pretty small in comparison to building a whole new civilization or building a whole new unit type, and all that type of thing. And then you had the higher price tag on that just to recoup the costs of developing that new content. Yeah. And when you have games like League of Legends and StarCraft and Dota 2 where you kind of get that same RTS feel, it doesn't seem like there's any reason to stick around with Age of Empires Online when you can still get the same enjoyment from something that's free to play or close to it.
I thought design-wise, they had a good idea. I like the idea how you would equip units, like all like the loot that you would see in an action game or an RPG would be attributed to your unit, so you could make your spearmen do more damage, but maybe cost a little more, or just do general upgrades. But on the flip side of that, whenever you add in like those little modifications, that just destroys game balance. Because, I mean, if you look at StarCraft 2, they have things down to the second, to the decimal point of, you know, how quick to get a unit out, how much resources to have in bank. I mean, have you guys ever listened to, like, professional, like, casters who talk about StarCraft 2?
Oh, yeah.
Pretty extreme. I kind of love it because it gives me a peek into a world I'll never understand.
Yeah, me too. I used to listen to Day 9 a lot. I mean, those types of games are just built on having these set-in-stone variables. And when you try to change that, even if it's, you know, 0.15% speed, that has, you know, consequences that it's very hard to foretell.
Yeah, and you have to keep things balanced or you're going to, you know, get a bunch of rage from your fan base.
And they did try to do PvP in Age of Empires. They released a booster pack. That's what they were calling the DLC editions. You could play skirmish against the AI. There was general PvP. But with, like, the regular form of it, if you weren't using a premium civilization, you weren't having those increased stats from items, you were basically screwed against someone who had, you know, who spent the money. Left that out, that little awkward silence there.
No, it's okay. We can always cut it out and put some music in there instead, which we won't do.
But going back to having like that pay barrier, Kenneth, with Super Mighty Knight Combat and Planet Side 2, how is it bad at all with, you know, free versus having to spend money?
Listen, you know, for Mortal Kombat Combat, I don't feel like I'm required to spend any money in that game. Though, because of the, you know, pretty solid design and how everything's pretty well done and how the, you know, the base seems like they know what they're doing. And it sounds like a community that you could really get into. You know, you have that kind of urge to spend on certain things. And it is really geared around the whole Mechatrans store. So, I mean, that's one thing. Now, for Planet Side 2, it's so difficult. It's so difficult that, you know, I had to actually watch videos of other people playing it and had to find out what items to actually buy because there's so many choices. But you can actually trial weapons out for, like, a month, but you only can do it once a month or something. But, yeah, that's a game that I actually felt compelled that I needed to buy something to actually be able to, you know, compete with other people. So, but again, it's tastefully done, right? So as long as it's tastefully done and they feel like they have a, you know, if they have a polished game and they have, you know, they have supportive devs, then I think I'm more willing to spend money on a game.
Mm-hmm. And about, you know, making it, you know, force, I think one game that I played that did that the most would be World of Tanks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we used to play World of Tanks all the time together.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're stuck with that stupid I always love playing the that Russian tank, as I said before, that just had that one single shot and took like 2 minutes to reload. So I was just kite after like one single shot. Like, I missed. Runaway time.
Or the worst is when you hit the guy, but it gets reflected off their armor. It's like, yes, I hit. Damn, it did zero damage. And then he shoots back and kills you in one hit.
No, the worst is probably snipers, pretty much. The snipers in the game, the artillery.
Oh, God.
Just getting you. It kind of like, yeah, there's something irritating about the game. I always like to try to search for them in secret. But you always get blown up by the stupid artillery all the time. But it was fun. They're making, aren't they making a World of Planes game next?
Yeah. I think, I heard that it may be tied into World of Tanks in some way, but I don't know 100% sure.
Well, good news.
But yeah, World of Tanks is just, they were just really bad about their pay barrier. Because when you, every time you shoot your gun, it costs you in-game currency to fire each shell off.
Yes.
So you could have cases where you would win the battle, but still come out with a net loss due to repair and ammunition resupply.
Yeah, I only played the beta of it, so I didn't have to, I didn't even see that microtrans or do anything with the store. So.
And they had, so the only way you could play, like to play with friends, like legally, was someone had to spend the money for have like a premium access. That was the only way you could group up. And I think that took things a little too far. When, like, whenever you have to hold mechanics or systems hostage behind a pay barrier, I think that just hurts the game more.
Oh, speaking of which, have you guys looked at the Old Republic subscription model now?
I heard that, but no, I haven't. What's about that?
Well, they have two... levels. They have subscription and preferred status, and then there's a free-to-play. So basically, if you have free-to-play and you don't want to pay, you can't sprint until you reach level 15.
What?
Yeah. And a bunch of other stuff. They reduce your bank. They put a cap on how much in-game currency you can have. You can only use the chat in certain areas.
What?
Yeah.
I'm looking at that now. Did you see that link that he put in chat, Kenneth? And we'll put this, and I'm also going to put the EverQuest one on the podcast list, because for
that's,
those
who that's another crazy one. Yeah.
You've got to see these lists. It's like a small little book of everything that you can and can't do and how much money you need to spend.
Yeah.
God. Oh, man.
Just looking at this, this God. I'm not going to even bother jumping in.
Yeah.
What's the even point of playing the game?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, if you make the free-to-play so restrictive, you're not going to make people want to spend money. You're going to make them not want to play to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is crippled. I am not touching this game. I was thinking about it. Now I'm never going to touch it. Hopefully, Secret World did a better job, but we'll see. I didn't check see if they have a list either.
Yeah. And as you were saying, I think Guild Wars 2 really... they probably were the smartest release for an MMO or, you know, a free-to-play retail game of the year.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, people have a lot of faith in that company, too. It's similar to why everyone went crazy for the Cyberpunk 2077, because they know that they have a great catalog of games and that they are very supportive devs and they're always releasing new content. So, I mean, I feel like they're going to... that's why there's so much good faith in both Guild Wars 2 before its release and... how much good faith is in Cyberpunk game, even though it says whenever we want is when it's getting released. Mm-hmm. Whenever it's done, that's what they said. So, yeah.
All right, so here's a question for both of you. With how retail MMOs are switching to a free-to-play, do you see that as a sign that they're giving up, or whenever you hear that news, is that, you know, cause for celebration?
I would say celebration, because they're starting to realize the subscription model can't survive. Mm-hmm. And that they should, again, follow the Guild Wars structure of, you know, the only barrier to entry is the game itself, but after that, it's up to you. So, right.
Yeah.
I think that's the way to go.
If it's a game that's coming out and they say it's free to play, that's cool. If a game that was subscription and then they say, okay, well, now we're going free to play. I think that's kind of the last gasp there for them. Unless they do something crazy and change things up a lot, but it seems like it's pretty difficult for these companies to go from one to the other. Mm-hmm. I can't really think of a successful one off the top of my head.
A free-to-play?
That went free-to-play, yeah, from subscription.
We just talked about a bunch of them, didn't we?
Yeah, I think Lord of the Rings Online, Dungeons & Dragons Online, I think those two are, they were like the first two big ones that survived.
I think EverQuest 2 is also fine.
Is it doing all right? They have
a combo of subscription fee and free-to-play. That's store does really well. Mm-hmm. Every time they release something stupid, you see everyone has it.
I think the unintended result of how popular free-to-play is that it's hurt MMOs subscriptions even more, because now everyone says, you know, the first thing we see a subscription fee is, oh, I'll wait for the game to go free to play. So they're not even going to give them the sale to begin with until it goes free to play.
It sounds like the whole concept of a new release game, you're waiting for it to go on sale. But, you know, that's, I think the free to play is a little different kind of a stigma, because if it goes free to play, you don't really want, you think it's a bad thing, because you don't want to, mm-hmm. you realize that there's probably some major mechanical flaw in it for it to go to free to play. So again, like Robert said, it's that it sounds more of a negative than a positive for our game to go free to play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you know, something in some way had to be cut or had to be altered that wasn't originally intended for them to make that switch.
Right.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
All right. I think that's it. Do you guys have any other topics to discuss for free to play?
I don't think so.
MOBA games are doing pretty well, and I'm actually going to try Dota 2 eventually, but I'm really scared. I saw a preview of the game. You can watch people's streams of it on the actual game itself. And I was watching it, I'm like, I don't think I can handle that. But we're going to give it a shot this weekend, so we'll see.
Yeah, the luck curve in those games is just crazy. I have a bunch of guys who just play League of Legends and Dota 2, and I can't play with them anymore because they got like pissed off at me when I was doing bad. Even like during like a regular bot game, they would get pissed off. Like, you're not. Why do you keep feeding the other team? You suck.
It's because like when you lose, you downrank them too. So
yeah,
that's why it's such a really vicious like community there. But yeah, that's pretty much what I've got to say. So we should probably end the cast. It's been going on a long time.
Yeah, I think we're at, what are we at, 2 hours at this point?
Yeah, we are.
Alright. Okay, that will just about do it for the Perceptive Podcast this week. I would like to thank Robert and Kenneth for being with us.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, good to be here.
And, of course, you're welcome back, as well as anyone else we've had on in the past.
Cool, thanks.
Alright, so... for those of you listening, we'd like to thank you for tuning in, and we will talk to you again next week. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.